Okay, so Srila Prabhupada dedication. Srila Prabhupada dedicated his edition of Srimad Bhagavatam to Srila Prabhupada Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj on the 26th annual ceremony of his appearance day. In this dedication, Srila Prabhupada offered these simple but profound lines of homage. He lives forever by his instructions, and the follower lives with him.
So that's the point, is that by being absorbed in Srila Prabhupada's instructions, then, as he said, you live with him. And when Srila Prabhupada is quoting from other acharyas and giving different aspects, like Krishna and the Gita, or Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur and his commentaries, Rupa Goswami, Nectar Devotion, Sanatana Goswami and his commentaries and books, then you're associating with them, you're living with them. So this is the actual system, is that by sound, then you're with them, right? Just like you're chanting the holy name, you're with Krishna. So you're chanting the instructions of the acharyas, you're with them. It's a direct process. This is part of the five main direct activities of devotional service, is hearing, about Srimad Bhagavatam, as given to us in the association of the acharyas. So this becomes very profound, in that other things aren't as important. It means direct activities of devotional service are important, but as you go away from that, those, in other words, then those activities that you can directly connect to the direct activities, then you have the tertiary activities. So the tertiary activities, then those are important in as much as they support the secondary activities supporting the primary. Otherwise, they have actually no value for the soul on their own. They're here in the material world, whether we're here or not. And they themselves do not have any direct bearing on the soul. So the soul, the living entity, then as they are, can take these activities and connect them to Krishna, engage them in Krishna's service, then they become valuable. But on their own, they don't have a value for the soul. That's a very important thing to note. They don't stand, they have no bearing on the quality of devotional service, no bearing on the authority of devotional service. Like that. They are simply like you have a chair in your house. It does not establish what's devotional service. It does not establish the devotional service. It does not have any direction or anything to do with what is devotional service. Right? Now, if you engage the chair in Krishna's service by sitting in it and being engaged in some spiritual activity, it becomes spiritualized. It's not the other way around. It's very important to note that hearing the instructions of Srila Prabhupada, taking them, trying to apply them into one's own life, this is of value. This is real. This is substance. All other things are seen in substance in as much as they are connected to this. That's the whole point. Our connection to the spiritual life is through the acharyas. So as we are connected with them, we're factually connected to spiritual life. And if we're not connected to them, we try to observe the world and deal with the world separate from their instructions that have come down from Krishna and the previous acharyas. To that degree, we are disconnected from Krishna. Though, of course, we're surrounded by Krishna. The whole material world is Krishna. It's all his energies, but it's all his energies in the impersonal form. And so only when we see it in light of the instructions, which are dealing with the soul and his relationship to the Lord as Bhagavan, then it starts taking becomes takes on spiritual spiritualized, and we're able to move forward in devotional service. So this is very profound, as I said, that Srila Prabhupada's made this point, is that he lives forever in his instructions, the acharya, and by associating with that instruction, you live forever with them. This is reality. All else has to be seen in the context of this to be able to judge its reality. Yes. Okay, please. Then the preface.
Preface. Srila Prabhupada writes in the first paragraph of the preface, human society is no longer bounded by geographical limits to particular countries or communities. Human society is broader than in the Middle Ages, and the world tendency is toward one state or one human society.
Yes, because you see, in the one is that by the communication and everything, what goes on anywhere in the world, you can find out about it right now and see people that are doing activities all over the value systems, everything like this. So it's all being brought together. So if that's based on Krishna consciousness, then it's very, very strong, because then you have the whole world engaged nicely in Krishna's service. Right. But if they're not engaged in Krishna service, it's just so much more, so many more people doing the same Maya rather than before, when people didn't have such communication. Each little community might have their own angle on the detail of what Maya they were in. Though it's always, of course, eating, sleeping, mating, and defending. But it would have the aspect of that, you know, they would think their little community is important. Now people will think, oh, the whole world, the world community and all that is important. But unless it's connected to Krishna, it actually lacks any real importance, because whatever today they think is so important, tomorrow something else comes up and they completely forget about it. You can see it in the news. Today, something that's so important, the end of the world, everything depends upon this point. If something comes up tomorrow, they don't even talk about it, even though yesterday it was like, it was the point that would change the whole view and direction of the world and this and that. So that's the whole point. It just becomes Gramikata. So even though it's the whole world, it's still Gramikata. It's still village talk like that. So I would say there's a saying, you can take the person out of the village, but you can't take the village out of the person. So it's easy to see that even there in the big cities and they're doing big, big stuff, you see that people still act like villagers. So that's the thing. So then, therefore, villagers are engaged in the village talk. Yes, Mataji.
Written in the early 1960s, these lines anticipate the modern world civilization being so seamlessly linked by instantaneous electronic media that it becomes, as it is known today, a global village. Srila Prabhupada points out that a world society so closely integrated will naturally be concerned with the question of the ideal of a common cause. In recent times, this ideal of a common cause has come to be called the New World Order. Srila Prabhupada argues
just like the village is comfortable when everybody has the same values. If someone doesn't have the same values, then they may be, you know, naturally be comfortable. They may be feel the need to leave the village, or other people, you know, encourage them to leave the village. Another one village, you have one set of values. You know, at least, you know, there may be some range, but it has to be compatible enough that they can basically get along. So when you make the world village or the global village, then the same point is there. There has to be a common set of values. And the problem is that, okay, if you're in the little village with just X amount of people, there is a chance that you can have a predominance where most people actually think like that, believe like that, behave like that, and you can deal like that for generations. But then when you take all the villages of the world and put them together in one very large village, then you're not going to have that. You can't have that. There's going to be such differences between the different regions of the world and what they value. And then within those regions and those different areas within that little pockets, that on the material platform, you cannot bring them together, right? I think, as you'll see, Srila Prabhupada point out, only by Krishna consciousness. That's the only common thing, because the only common thing between all human beings is that they have the soul, and the soul being in a human body, it has the ability to actually consciousness. I mean, God conscious. So The animals also have the soul, but the nature of their gross and subtle bodies, they can't actually become God conscious, right? Or as Prabhupada points out, it will be extremely rare for such a thing to happen, right? You know, like we see Jarda Bharat, you know, in his previous life was a deer, you know, so you have examples like that, a King Riga as a lizard, you know, things like that. So you do have occasional, but I'm talking, you're talking about it's so rare. So that's, and you see, it's always in the context of somebody who was a devotee before. So the point is it doesn't have that ability, but the human life has that ability. So the ability to be engaged in spiritual life, and as the soul, to naturally, it's one's position to be engaged in spiritual life. This is the only common thing amongst all human beings. You know, that's all there is. You know, and of course, in the basic eating, sleeping, mating, defending, having an occupation to maintain yourself, a few things like this, but that's all. When you get into details, that's where you're going to see the difference. So therefore, you can't create the idea of the global village and everything will be so nice. It can't be obtained by material means. Yes, Mataji.
Srila Prabhupada argues that the ideal is best expressed as the first aphorism of Vedanta Sutra. From paragraph 2 of the preface, human society at the present moment is not in the darkness of oblivion. It has made rapid progress in the field of material comforts, education, and economic development throughout the entire world. But there is a pinprick somewhere in the social body at large, and therefore there are large scale quarrels, even over less important issues. Srila Prabhupada.
Yes, but that's just the point about they're all different and they'll always be different. I mean, even in one family, they argue. When you say on the village level, you have a general thing, means it's workable. They may argue this and that, but at the end of the day, they all kind of basically have the same values. But when you have this global village, then the values are so different, even though the media presents all these things, but people are only into that mood because of the association. You change the association, they change the mood, right? That's the way it works. So it's not a very solid basis for a system. Yes, please.
Srila Prabhupada pointedly mentions large-scale quarrels over less important issues. Note that this preface is dated at Delhi, 15th of December, 1962. In his purport to Bhagavatam 1.5.11, Srila Prabhupada gives an example of what sort of quarrel he means. The India-China border conflict that broke out in October 1962. While preparing this commentation on this particular stanza of Srimad Bhagavatam, while preparing this commentation on this particular stanza of Srimad Bhagavatam, we have a crisis before us. Our neighboring friend China has attacked the border of India with a militaristic spirit. We have practically no business in the political field. Yet we see that previously there was both China and India. They both lived peacefully for centuries without ill feeling. The reason is that they lived those days in the inner atmosphere of God consciousness, and every country over the surface of the world was God-fearing, pure-hearted, and simple. There was no question of political diplomacy. There is no cause of quarrel between the two countries.
Yeah, you can see is that previously they would all the countries are living together. You're not hearing of great wars and things like that. So we see is that of the two great wars in history that's documented in Ramayana and Mahabharata, both of them are started by a demon for their own personal position, right? So one, Ravana, then it was about his sense gratification. And Duryodhana, it was for his own position and prestige, right? his greed. He had to have the whole world. He wasn't happy with just his half of the kingdom. He had to have the whole world. So greed, we were discussing before, the greed, the prestige, and therefore then violence towards others. So these aspects, as Prabhupada was saying, the countries are living very simply together, simply God conscious and all that, whatever their position. And so then they will live more nicely and all that. So as you go in, as you come into with all the great, you know, leadership and all that of the world being destroyed during the Mahabharata war, then naturally we see without proper leadership, and there's not proper God consciousness, and then you fall into all these different regions and areas just fighting amongst themselves. Please.
There is no cause of quarrel between the two countries, China and India, over land, which is not very suitable for habitation. And certainly there's no cause for fighting on this issue. But due to the age of quarrel, Kali, which we have discussed, there is not always a chance of quarrel on slight provocation. This is due not to the issue in question, but due to polluted atmosphere of this age.
Yeah, it means the Kali Yuga is meant for, it's meant for those who have a natural propensity towards arguing with everybody else, right? That's the uniqueness of this age, is that you want to walk around with a chip on your shoulder and fight with everybody. This is the age for you. Because in other ages, it wasn't actually, nobody really cared. But in this age, then, yes, it's very popular. So Prabhupada's pointing out is that they're fighting over land that is uninhabitable. Right, just like you see between, he's talking about India and China from the northeast, those areas up in Arunachal Pradesh and Bhutan, and Sikkim, those places aren't, you know, there's no real gain. And you see is that, you know, China itself has huge amounts of land, and even the whole of Tibet, much of it is plateaus, and that is not that great, but they still have to go out and try to catch more, right? And then, you know, and next door, then you have Pakistan, and then as soon as the land map is drawn and that, and the independence is given, immediately Pakistan comes in and tries to take that northern part of, you know, Kashmir and everything like that, even though they've been given, you know, given something before. It was all going to be India, but then they were giving an area for themselves. No, but we agreed and have to take more. And the part where they're fighting and all that is uninhabitable. Means if you like snow all the time, okay. But otherwise, then, so the point is they're fighting just to fight. They're fighting just because then you feel it gives a sense of purpose. It gives a sense of meaning. We're, you know, us, them. And so whatever we do is good. Whatever they do is bad. And it gives a sense that you're doing something important, you know. So that's the problem with the age of quarrel, is that it's always going to be the quarrel itself is what gives the importance, gives the meaning. While in previous ages, then it would be worship of the deities, you know, performance of yajna, performance of meditation. These things would be the prominent element like that. So in the Kali Yuga, unless one takes up the chanting the holy name and focuses on that and makes that the prominence, one will fight, one will argue. It's just the nature of how it works. It's designed like that. Yes, Mataji.
Since the time Prabhupada wrote these words, wars of global consequences were fought due to border tensions between North and South Vietnam, India and Pakistan, Great Britain and Argentina, the states of the former Yugoslavia, Iraq and Iran, Iraq and Kuwait, to name a few. The preface continues by arguing that Srimad Bhagavatam is intended to be humanity's main educational resource. Srimad Bhagavatam should be...
The point is that... Yeah, go ahead.
Srimad Bhagavatam should be introduced also in the schools and colleges what is recommended by the great student Prahlad Maharaj in order to change the demoniac face of society. Komaraj Acharet Pragno Dharman Bhagavatam Iha Dullabam Manuna Janma Tad Apya Dhruvam Artadam. Srimad Bhagavatam 7.6.1. Prahlad Maharaj said,
okay, just here. Yeah.
Oh, that's good.
We have a question, G.
Can you hear properly?
It's a little thin.
Oh, okay, 1 second. Is it better now?
Yes.
Now it's good.
Okay, I was too far away from the mic. I would just like to add, because as I'm now studying to become a teacher, so then we have to learn how to lead a discussion, a democratic discussion in a multicultural society, which means that there are different approaches, and certain approaches is because many questions are, how can you say, conflicting and may create a lot of debate and emotions in a classroom. So the conclusion of the whole thing is that you can't come to a consensus. That's the conclusion. So the only thing you can do is try to understand each other's, but at the end you have to agree to disagree. So that is like the conclusion in a multicultural society where people have so many different values, and they come from different backgrounds like that. So I just thought, like, wanted to contribute to this discussion that they really don't have any solution if it's not Krishna conscious.
Yeah, because that's the only thing that's common amongst everybody. Because the thing is human beings, if they're acting for the purpose of God consciousness, you know, they have theological position that there is the supreme God, and then we have therefore his teachings in the scriptures, and if we follow those, then we can benefit, because we are in line with the laws of God's, because the platform of Manomoy then means that we're following the laws of God. That's what defines it, right? So the other aspects means the Anamoy, Pranamoy, if they're in line with the laws of God, then they have their place. They naturally help, you know, in applying the skills and getting the results and engaging the senses. But unless there's a following of the laws of God, then you can't actually have any common ground. Then above that, is the spiritual of understanding the soul. So then you go beyond these other aspects that are there based on conditioning. And then when you go to the transcendental platform, that devotional position in service to the Lord, that then is the place where all living entities can have actually a proper relationship with each other, because you have your relationship with God, right? That's just how it works. You can say, no, I can have a direct relationship, but you actually can't. It's just like you have two hands, right? Now, the two hands, they're both part of one body, so they have a relationship with each other based on the body. They don't have a relationship with each other just based on their hands without the body. Otherwise, why would they be connected? Why would these two hands be together? Because they're the same body. Right? So that's the whole point, is that all living entities have a relationship with each other by their relationship with the Lord. And through that relationship with the Lord, then it's that they're worshiping the Lord, you're worshiping the Lord, and then how you can how the two of you can cooperate in relation to the Lord. You know, so either in the direct activities or in the indirect activities like this, and all the tertiary elements become connected up to these higher levels. That's the only way you can have. So the transcendental actually naturally very comfortably solves this problem of relationship, right? The other is that, okay, we're all the soul, and so it's all just one. But unless they can see where that oneness is coming from God and therefore our relationship, it won't be seen. And if you just follow the laws, there's so many laws for so many situations. And so different living entities will focus, according to their conditioning, on laws that match their conditioning and ignore, and because other laws don't necessarily connect to them so much because they're not working in the area. Therefore, then those who are, then even if they're following those laws, then you have all this problem between religionists and moralists, how they fight with each other because they're working in different fields. Because God's laws covers everything. And so depending on what you're working in, that's what they're going to be absorbed in, or what you notice, what you value. Right? You know, that's Krishna's point. If you don't see what you value in relation to the Lord, it's illusion. But even just seeing it in relation to the Lord, if you're just seeing it as laws of God and that's all, not the person, then it doesn't go, okay, this situation, how does it please the Lord? Because if that's the point, then everyone's trying to please the Lord as a person, then you get a common set of values. Otherwise, yes, they're all broadly connected because of their connection with the Lord, but you're not getting it where they connect because of the personal aspect. So only the personal aspect can actually bring all people together. You know, so that's the only way the whole village can be together, is because of its relationship with the Lord as a person. Yes. So in these discussions like this, because the main point is they say you can't go any farther than this because they don't have the, you can't have a conclusion because they don't have a, they don't actually have, they're not working on an absolute set of values. So they can't see, well, actually there is standards. And then depending, so is it a matter of this group is approaching that particular standards from this angle and that was from that? Let's say like, okay, everybody has lunch. So then someone's approaching it from one angle, you know, that's the main meal. Someone else, it's just a snack. Someone else, it's, well, actually, you don't have a meal in the middle of the day because we have a big meal in the morning, a big one in the evening. So we don't need a lunch, you know, like this. And so these three groups could be fighting over what's the real thing. When the point is that the point is there must be nourishment of the body. These are the particular times that are recommended. You know, it's just like, if you have the option, you can eat at lunch, that's what you would do, right? But then that's based on, is it your main meal because you don't have something else to disturb it at that time? So therefore you can, either the social value is like that, or, you know, your lifestyle is like that. And so that's your main meal. Or you're working. And so therefore, because you're working, therefore you have a big meal in the morning, which might be basically too big for others, but because you're doing that, and you're going out and working, therefore it doesn't bother you, right? And because of all that hard work, you can eat again in the evening and like this. So you have to see the common point of nourishing the body. But if you just see the externals of eating and what they're eating and how they're eating it, they'll fight forever about this. So the point is unless you can bring it up to the principles of what's governing these things, then that becomes the point, is that you can't have any conclusion because they don't have one. So in other words, the people who are training that in a classroom, you can't come to any conclusion because everybody's different. The point is that they don't have a conclusion. Therefore, there's nothing to judge it against. Right. And so if you take this one or that one's opinion, then yes, it'll just be an opinion. But if you take the absolute truth, then you don't have a problem. Yes. Question.
I just wanted to add, not only they don't have a conclusion, but at the same time, if everyone would agree So then it in a democracy, democracy means to have different opinions. And if one wants to have everyone on the same opinion, it means democracy is over, and then it's an autocracy, autocratic or dictatorship. So then for a democratic country and their values, they actually can never come to any agreement. Otherwise, they are contradicting the democracy. So that was quite interesting. That was some philosopher called Chantal Mouffe who was saying like that. But it is actually true.
What you see is that those democracy means what is the value of the people, means what is the major value? Because 51% means a majority, unless it's agreed they use a higher majority. But otherwise, then it's 51%, but that means 49% don't agree. But so it's just a matter of rule of the majority. That's what makes the democracy. See, a lot of times democracy is tried to be played up as something more important and more glorious than it actually is. Let's say you have a village, and in the village, you know, then they find there's some lady who has some skills in that no one else has. She's so much better at it than everybody else. And so the other ladies of the village are envious. They talk to the husbands about this. And so then the conclusion is she's a witch. And then the whole village comes out with their pitchforks and torches. And they catch this girl, tie her to a stake, put a bunch of firewood, and light it on fire. That is democracy. That's not against democracy. That is democracy. Democracy is whatever the majority says. That's what goes. So democracy is weak. So back when the philosophers of the Greeks, when they come up with it, because democracy is a Greek word, you know, it may be coming to us to the Latin, but it goes back to the Greeks. They already saw the problem in democracy, because point is if all the people are agreeing, then, and they have character and culture, and it's for elevation of consciousness, then democracy is not a problem. But if they're untrained and they're only interested in their own benefits, then it's a problem. So again, it still comes back to the point that it's only through proper training and having an absolute standard that you can actually even have a proper democracy. So if everybody is agreeing, no, it all should be for the pleasure of Krishna, and that's the prominent rule, then that democratic aspect is good. So it's not that the democratic element's not there in the Vedic system. It's just not the system. It's a system in a bigger system. Right? You know, it's just like in cooking. You have so many techniques. They all go together as cooking. Now you have people that you probably come across it, that their whole system of cooking is don't cook at all, just eat it raw, right? Or you have where it's just either steamed, right? Not even boiled, because in boiling, you see the problem with boiling is when you boil, you put something in the water, all the nutrients get sucked out into the water. And then the vegetable or whatever it is that you're boiling has absolutely zero nutritional value at all. And by eating it, you'll kill yourself like that. Have you come across this? Yes. So someone's going to not even, it's only steam, but then how much do you steam? Like if you steam it more, then it becomes soft and it loses all the things, and you steam it less and it's more fuller and crunchy and this and that. But of course, we don't have ability to digest cellulose. We're not cows. So then there's a weakness there. So for someone with a good pita constitution, salads and these things work very well. But anybody else will not do so well. So, but then that's not the full range of cooking. Because in cooking, I mean, it's not an uncommon thing. Let's say you're making I'll just give an example in Bengali cooking, that you're making, let's say, a cauliflower, potato, and paneer sabji, right? In a rich sauce. right? You know, let's say you're taking cashews or cooked down milk as koa and making a sauce out of this. Now it's going to be one of your richer subjects. Not going to get much richer than that. But it's not an uncommon thing that they don't steam the potatoes and the cauliflower first. And then when they make the chaunce and lightly fry it just to get a little bit of flavor, but it lightens the whole thing. So you combine the steaming, putting it together in a preparation that's actually would be considered heavy. But if you do it that way, it's not actually. So you have to know all the different things and you put it together, then it's very nice. That's the whole thing. So when you overemphasize one aspect, then that's where your problem starts. So the democratic, this whole idea, oh, then it's not democracy. It's like, but if it's in an area that it's not supposed to be democratic, then why are we worried about it? Right? In other words, the whole idea is that, oh, we'll lose democracy as if when is the democratic element the best? Because you say, oh, if everybody agrees, then it's an autocracy. But that's what democracy is about, is a majority rule. So if the majority is 100%, it's still democracy. If it's 70%, 80%, 60%, it's 51%, it's still democracy. You know, so that becomes the point. It's whoever is the majority that rules. But now they want to keep a balance so no one else gets power. So you try to break it all up into smaller groups. So let's say the majority group has 38%, you know, and the other groups have 5%, 10%, 2%, like this. And so then, you know, no one really has too much power. So that's why they say you have to break it up, because they don't want anyone having more power except themselves. Right? In other words, they're making these statements about democracy. And there should be difference of opinion. But 100% everybody should accept their opinion on what is democracy. So in other words, that person who made this statement, everybody should, you know, listen to it. You know, it's just like, what was it? I think it was Mayor Baba or something. One should not trust authority. And he writes this in his book. And we're supposed to accept his book as authority. So that's what we're dealing with, is that you either have an absolute truth or you'll make up your own. Bhaktivinoda, of course, made that point. You either follow religion or you'll make up your religion. Like you see, those who get rid of religion are the secularists and atheists. They have their own religion and everybody should follow it. They're saying, oh, these religionists are dogmatic, and these atheists and others, they're so dogmatic. You can't, if you're religious, oh, that's bad. And they're saying, oh, the religionists say, you know, the atheists are bad. But the atheists say the religious, it's the same thing. So that's why you have to have an absolute truth as a common point that everybody can work off of. Otherwise, it won't be there. Now you have the ability to listen to others, but unless you're trying to see what they're saying and understand it on a higher principle, then there can be no cooperation, because we agree to disagree. What have we done? We've just spent our time and nothing can be done. Means, in other words, if I agree to disagree with you, we can't work together on that point. It's not a point of working. So you haven't done anything glorious by we agree to disagree. Right. So then the point is if we agree to, why come together in the first place? Just stay in your own little group, do your thing in your little group. Don't bother others, right? So again, you go back to the village all around the world, you know, not the world village, but just the villages all over the world. So that's the thing, they're thinking, oh, we're doing something higher. We're agreeing to disagree. And so that way, then we have this wonderful thing like that. But what can they do together? What can any of those people in that room that don't agree do together practically on the economic, you know, the political, the judicial, the religious, any of this, what can they do together? Nothing. Because there's no common point to understand that there is an absolute authority when it comes to everything. The laws of nature are the laws of God. And so therefore, you have to follow those laws. That's the common point. That makes human society, because otherwise, basically what they're doing is saying, just like this. We have out, you know, we go out into the jungle, you know, or the forest, or any natural place. And there's so many animals and birds and reptiles and bugs all living there. They all agree to disagree. And they're all living there. You can say living in harmony. But they're living in harmony is just, it's harmonious because it's God's laws. But other one, each one is eating the other. You know, so the whole point is it only works because of God's laws. And that way they can all live together. But it's not that they necessarily interact with each other or have any relationship with each other. Right? You know, the zebras are there and the wildebeest is there. But it's not that they interact. It's just, you don't bother me, I don't bother you. Right? In other words, you don't kick me in the face, I won't poke you in the side with my horns. So, you know, and if that's considered, wow, that's a great win for society, then our standards are pretty low. Right? Is that okay?
Yes, Maharaj, thank you very much. It was a very important contribution into that perspective. That is
okay.
Yeah.
Thank you.
And can I just ask,
yes.
Devotees, when devotees don't agree, and like you said, that then you can't really cooperate, but then what could be the cause if devotees can't agree and then can't cooperate? Is it that some devotees then are not having the Shastra, Guru Sadhu Shastra, as their guideline anymore? Could that be the reason?
It's just a matter of, the point is you have an absolute standard, and that standard is given to us through the Acharyas, as we pointed out. Srila Prabhupada has given his books and his purports. And so therefore, based on that, then we try to understand. Now in this, you have to understand what is Prabhupada trying to say by his point. Because when you take the books, then in the books, then he's going to be making a point in the purport. Right? The Bhagavatam's making a point. It's a discussion. A question has been asked. The question is being answered. And then in the verses, then relevant elements are being brought out by the acharyas and the purports. Those purports have a purpose in connection with the how to connect ourselves to the absolute. In the discussion, we will give an example, right? The example is given. That's part of how logic works. Because you're trying to make whatever you're saying have a value or meaning to the person that you're dealing with. So an example is a way that you give them an idea or an understanding of something. Means like if you don't understand something, I speak about something you do know about, and then once it's kind of caught, then I compare them. Right? That's the point, is that the synthesis is comparison. Right? You make that kind of a element. Right? So the example is, I think the acharyas give, is that you've never seen in Vrindavan, you have the blue, right? I don't know if any of you have ever seen them, but in Vrindavan, you have the blue cows, Nilgai. They're actually a kind of deer, right? Very big deer, like, you know, almost as like a cow, you know, that size. And they're kind of like a bluish color. Right? That kind of aspect. So you've never seen one, but you've seen a cow. Now we say it's basically kind of like a cow, but it's bluish in color. Right? Because you've never seen one, so there's nothing else to compare it to, but you've seen a cow. So now when you go to Vrindavan and something that looks kind of like a cow, but it's not exactly a cow, but it's slightly bluish color, then you go, oh, this is the blue cow. Right? This is the Nilgai. Right? That's how it works. So now in giving that example of something that you know and something you relate to, if you take that itself and think that is the point, you have literally missed the point. Because the discussion in this is about blue cows, not about cows. It's about blue cows. That's the example. So now if I go on about cows and go off into the distance, but we're actually talking and blue, and the point of the blue cows is just so that you know that this is something in Vrindavan or something. This is one of the, you know, animals in Vrindavan. Right? So it's more about Vrindavan, and Vrindavan has such a variety of animals and that they even have things like blue cows and parrots and peacocks. I mean, where else in the world has such a variety of amazing animals, right? So you're talking about the amazing animals of Vrindavan, you give that as an example, no one knows what that is, so then you explain the cow and then like this, and so then, you know, like this, it's explained. But if you take the discussion on the cow as the main point, that wasn't the point that was being made. It was about the variety. Does that make sense? So sometimes we see is that what happens is somebody will take that, they only remember the example of the purport and not necessarily the point. Or they take the point that the verse is made and that, but they don't necessarily see it in context of the purport, how Prabhupada talks about it. You know, so then like that, you know, just like, let's say we've already mentioned about, you know, Varnashram, about, you know, it'll be talking about the importance of Varnashram. So someone will take that and go, see, if you're not doing Varnashram, then, you know, you can't even be properly a devotee or this or that, blah, you know, and that because, but in the purport, Prabhupada talked about how you situate yourself and you engage that in Krishna's service. So it's about serving Krishna. But because you have a conditioned nature, you situate yourself according to Varnashram to see that you're nicely engaged. So it wasn't about, so in other words, Varnashram means connecting it to Krishna, right? But now in that purport, then Prabhupada, after having said about human life starts with Varnashram, then he warns against thinking that Varnashram is by birth and getting off on the bodily platform. In other words, if Varnashram becomes a cause for bodily concept of life, that's wrong. So now others will see, Prabhupada says here, Varnashram is not important for us. We don't need to follow it. So one took the verse. One took the, you know, some point being made in the example or explanation, you know, and that, and both of them have missed the point. What's the point? The point is that we are engaged in devotional service to Krishna as our primary aspect. And then the secondary, which is our gross and subtle body, we're engaging that through Varnashram, connecting that to the primary. So in other words, being engaged in Krishna's service, that's the primary aspect. So that will hold both of them together. You know. Does that make sense?
Yes, very much, Maharaj. Very, very, very clear.
Okay. Okay.
Thank you, Maharaj.
Okay, thank you. Sorry. Yes, so then?
The translation to Srimad Bhagavatam 7.6.1, Prahlad Maharaj said, one who is sufficiently intelligent should use the human form of body from the very beginning of life, in other words, from the tender age of childhood, to practice the activities of devotional service, giving up all other engagements.
So that's the point, is that human life is about God consciousness. That's the thing that it's unique for. And this then is being pointed out here, Srila Prabhupada say, quoting from Prahlad Maharaj, that this understanding of Bhagavatam and the angle of Bhagavatam, that should be taught to the children from the young age, right? Means by associating with the parents, they're going to hear something about it and they're going to be do this or don't do that based on what are the standards as is given and, you know, as we've learned from Srila Prabhupada from the Bhagavatam. But starting at the age of 5, now you can actually, you know, start learning properly, you know, in a way, how all the different things are to Krishna, right? And so you know, the more things to memorize, and then the things, the skills, and then ultimately the philosophy. Though philosophy and skills are there all the way along, it's just where the prominence is, right? The prominence is on memorizing things. That's what the younger kids up to 12 can do, that that above 12 is not as easy. Then from 12 to you know, say 15, the skills and all that can be learned very easily then. In other words, a kid at that age will try anything and work at it. And if it doesn't work, he doesn't get embarrassed. He just keeps doing it until he gets it. But younger than that, they'll try it, didn't work, then they lose interest, you know, or something else gives in it. And if they're above 16, then, oh, they did it wrong, and oh, I can never do that again. It's so embarrassing, and this and that. So it's a perfect age for that. But then from 16 above, then the focus is on the philosophy, right? You've heard the philosophy. You've been hearing the philosophy since you were a kid. So now when you hear it, you know, in an analytical way at 16, it sticks because you already have the background. So that's Prahlad Maharaj's point, is that if you learn from a young age, then it becomes part of your character, part of your culture, part of your nature, you know, like that. And that's how you view, it's your perspective. Otherwise, then there's always this other perspective. Like you see those who have gone through so much of the, you know, materialistic culture, they tend to have a perspective from that view. It's hard for them to look at it from Krishna consciousness. In other words, if on the material side it lines up, in other words, okay, if we look at it like this, we're going to take this, here's the logic. God is good, right? So all things good is God, right? So now, in my opinion, then this is good and that's not good. And this person is doing this and that, so they're not good, so they can't be Krishna conscious. But it doesn't necessarily have anything to do with the connection between the two. You haven't connected the soul and its relationship with God. You've connected what you think is there, you know, like we talked before, the democratic thing or, you know, some other thing. If you're not democratic in the way I say you should be, then it's not good. And so therefore then, if you're not good, then since God is good, devotional service is good, you're not a devotee. You know, it works very great. If you want to work out us and them, it's a perfect system. So if you want to fight and argue over everything because it's Kali Yuga, this is the way to do it. Right? So, one has to see is that, no, it's about the relationship of the soul with God and what's going to bring the soul in connection with God. In other words, that's already the prime point. In other words, if something wrong, it's because you're dealing with the law wrong. So what's the solution? Don't go against the law. Right? Just like, let's say, somebody crosses in the street, in the middle of the street, right? Doesn't go to the crosswalk. So now that's wrong. Now, how do you solve this problem? Educating them how, by using the crosswalk, then that makes everything, because in between the crosswalks, the cars, everything's moving. They're not expecting people to walk, right? Because it's not, because a car and a person can't occupy the same ground space at the same time, right? You can say, no, I found a fault. There are people in the car. So the car and the people are the people on the same spot on the ground as the car. No, they're above the ground. They're not touching the ground. The person is touching the ground with their feet, and then the car is touching them. Doesn't work, right? So you have to understand is therefore at the crosswalks, then that's the place where either people walk or cars go, but not both at the same time, right? So just as in the street, the car goes, the people don't walk on the crosswalk, people walk, cars don't go. Right? So once that's understood, you follow that, the problem is solved. Does that make sense? That's the glory of God's creation. All you have to do is stop not breaking the rule and start following the rule. That's the solution. Right? Let's say I go in the kitchen and I cook something wrong, right? I don't boil the potatoes enough, or I boil them too much. And so now, is there any other solution to the problem other than understanding how to cook it properly and cooking properly? Does that make sense? You know, should we, you know, like that. There is no other solution. Right? Means I should write in a book, you know, 1,000 times, I shall not overboil the potatoes. You know, and so does that solve the problem? You still don't have any properly cooked potatoes. It's only if you go and cook. Right? So Mano makes the point that prayaschitta is actually only for the common person. That's all. That's what it's for. So all those rules about this and that and punishments are only for the common person, because the common person doesn't have the faith and have the knowledge and understanding or the purity or the character to understand that, no, just by serving God, that's all you have to do. You're breaking the law, stop breaking the law. Do what's proper. That's how everything will work. So if that's how you're taught since you're a child, that's how you'll think. But if you're taught from a child about us and them and this one and that one, and, oh, we all agree to disagree and all this and that, then, okay, we all agree to disagree. So now I need to be able to talk with somebody that I can have an actual conversation with. That means there has to be common ground. So what am I going to do? I'm going to understand, okay, of these, you know, 30 kids in the room, and all that, these three kids over there have the same kind of view that I do. I will associate with them. So they're thinking we're creating the global village by everyone living together. No, all they've done is created, you know, 10 different groups of kids that don't have anything to do with each other. They do that when they're young, okay, but as they get older, there's less and less. And what's the idea by doing that is slowly, slowly breaking down. That anything other than what is being presented by the school is wrong, that mentality. So whatever value the teacher has, that's the one to take. So success is when at the end of the day, all of them think the same. And that's the way the education is. It means they won't present it in that word. They'll use very wonderful language and ways to present it. But basically, they just want to make everybody the same. You can say, it's all about thinking. As long as you think, it's all about thinking is the important thing. Everybody agrees to disagree, and that is the conclusion. In other words, she said, there's no conclusion, but the conclusion is we all agree to disagree. And that's the absolute conclusion that you cannot go against. So in other words, any conclusion other than that conclusion is a wrong conclusion. So even though they're saying, oh, no, but we can't make a conclusion, they've made a conclusion by stating that that is the way we're going to deal. And anybody who goes against that is wrong. Anybody who goes against that will be punished. They will have to go see the principal. If they still talk too much, they will be suspended. Talk more, they will be expelled. And I'm talking reality here. I'm not talking, no, it's not like that. No, it's exactly like that. It's exactly like that. So the point is that the Krishna consciousness has to be the basis, and what Prabhupada said, why is he saying it like that? What is he trying to do? So in other words, if there's vada, we're trying to understand that. But if we're only arguing over it because, you know, we want to fight because it's Kali Yuga, then it will never, you can't make a common ground. So Prahlad Maharaj is saying is that if from the beginning you're hearing like this, then the things work nicely. But the point is one can say, oh, but we've had our educational systems. Where are the kids like that? The funny point is guru coolies from all over the world feel that they have the same culture. I have not seen that with those who have joined as adults. If they're more Krishna conscious, yes. But as they kind of fall back into we're just being practical, Prabhu, the differences are greater and greater. But the second generation, they're all one group. Basically, say is between that, okay, those who would follow the four regs and those who don't care so much, you can kind of make that distinction, but that even that is a temporary thing, that the person now who's breaking all the rules, and later on he becomes the most fanatic about it and this and that. But I haven't seen that there's so much of a difference in culture between the Gurukulis and the adults. You know, even though the Gurukulis grow up and become adults, but they have much more of a community than anybody else of first generation. Like that. So the whole, that's Prahlad Maharaj's point. So if there's Krishna, there is some change. Now, if they were talking about the principles of Krishna consciousness and how it all connects to Krishna and why you should do and that explanation, and they've been hearing that since they're five, then you would get a very nice result like Prahlad Maharaj is talking about. Okay, please. Mike.
Sorry. The human body is most rarely achieved, and although temporary like other bodies, it is meaningful because in human life one can perform devotional service. Even a slight amount of sincere devotional service can give one complete perfection.
Yeah, slight amount can give complete perfection. But if you have any attachment in anywhere for Krishna, that can give you complete. It's not that you have to be perfect on everything at all times, all places. No, there's even one thing you're perfect at. Now, to increase a thing, you increase. It's like you see, at least an Indian businessman or any good businessman never puts all their money in one place. They diversify it. Because if something goes wrong in one place, you have another place that'll work. So in the same way, as you try to have the widest range of devotional activities and connections as you can, because if in one of them, you are absorbed in Krishna, then that's great. And if you're in another, it's not, there's one that you can be. So the idea is that something will get you more connected to Krishna. Please.
Disparity in human society is due to lack of principles in a godless civilization. There is God, or the Almighty One, from whom everything emanates, but by whom everything is maintained, and whom in everything is merged to rest. Material science has tried to find the ultimate source of creation very insufficiently, but it is a fact that there is one ultimate source of everything that be. This ultimate source is explained rationally and authoritatively in the beautiful Bhagavatam or Srimad Bhagavatam.
Yeah, so that's the point. This is the basis. It has to go back to there. It's not explained. If the, as you said, the principles, the human life is a problem because it's lacking the principles. Right? So principles, both in the way of, what is proper behavior, but so that's, that's that, what you could say is central principles, like that, but at the same time as you have, economic principles, you have religious principles, you have spiritual principles, you have devotional principles. So on all these things, the principle is there. And so all those principles go back into the ultimate, into the absolute truth. And that's explained in Bhagavatam. You see the example of that right from the very beginning of the Bhagavatam, right to the end, that in all times, places, and circumstances, it's different individuals and their situations, how they're connecting themselves according to their nature, Krishna. So we have so many nice examples, so many variety of examples of how someone is connecting themselves to Krishna, right?
Yes. Those who learn Srimad Bhagavatam seriously should themselves teach it to others. It is powerful reading matter in the Sanskrit language, and it is now rendered into English elaborately so that simply by carefully reading, one will know God perfectly well. So much as so, the reader will be sufficiently educated to defend himself from the onslaught of atheists. Over and above this, the reader will be able to convert others to accepting God as a concrete principle. Students should study Srimad Bhagavatam.
Yeah, so then you're hearing yourself, and then you are trying to help others understand. It means those who In other words, you have those who you come in contact, you have an opportunity, you could explain something, or you have situations where you go out and create those situations and explain. The idea is to share. That's the point of human life, is since human life is about God consciousness, then the sharing is in relationship to God consciousness. So even everything else is going on culturally, but it's all connected to Krishna. Like you're taking prasad, but prasad is offered to Krishna, right? You're relating as devotees. What's a pleasant way to sit and honor prasad like that? Because it says honor, it doesn't say eat, right? So, you know, so the point is that it's how to interact with Krishna and the devotees, with Krishna as prasad, as the central feature. You know, so many different aspects you can see is that what would be the appropriate thing to do. And so in that, naturally, if you're offering things to Krishna, then that means you're working within a certain range of what can be offered and all that. So what's edible? So then as a human being, you're eating that which is offered to Krishna, right? So, and which is the remnants of the Vaishnavas, right? So what's remnants of sacrifice? What's remnants of the Vaishnavas, right? So what's offered the sacrifice then is offered the Vaishnavas, so we eat that, then you get both, right? So that kind of aspect is that it automatically takes care of that we're vegetarian. It's not about being vegetarian. It's about serving Krishna by cooking for him and then accepting the remnants that Krishna eats. That's what it's about. So Krishna Prabhupada says we're Krishnatarian. That's the primary. That's the principle. As a secondary, you know, or tertiary, then you can say we're vegetarian. Right? So when people are fighting over, you know, is it vegan or is it meat eating or like that and all that. No, it's we're Krishnatarians. That's what you do. You offer to Krishna. Now, what will Krishna eat? He doesn't eat the meat. And the vegan, you can offer that, but he would be much happier if you put some dairy on it. You know? Does that make sense? You know? Yeah. I think wasn't there a song, something like that? If you want to please Krishna, then put some. That time, no.
Okay. Students should study Srimad Bhagavatam systematically, which means as Srila Prabhupada presents it in his published edition. Srimad Bhagavatam begins with the definition of the ultimate source. It is a bona fide commentary on the Vedanta Sutra by the same author, Srila Vyasadeva. And gradually it develops into 9 cantos up to the highest state of God realization. The only qualification one needs to study this great book of transcendental knowledge is to proceed step by step cautiously and not jump forward haphazardly like with an ordinary book.
Like an ordinary book, you may look here and there, you want to know something you don't know, you may look ahead to see because you can't wait till tomorrow to find out, and then you can sleep, and then the next morning, then you see, okay, what happened in between and stuff like that. Bhagavatam, no, it's just start at the beginning and go until, because he's saying the first 9 cantos are bringing you to the point where you have the qualification to appreciate the pastimes, right? Because just on its own, you may or may not appreciate the pastimes. So therefore, by reading the 9 cantos, so we can say, oh, but what about Krishna book? But we see Prabhupada so expert has worked the principles to be understood from the first 9 cantos into his purports on the Krishna book. But he writes it in such a way that it flows so nicely that the difference between what Sukadeva Goswami speaking and Prabhupada's purport sounds like one story. Right? But you're still getting the benefit. The principle is still there. So as it goes and you see how it's all connected and everything in various angles according to the question, according to the expertise of the teaching of Sukadeva Goswami, and how he's bringing Prakrit Maharaj forward in his God consciousness and understanding. But it means he's speaking to him, but actually he's speaking in such a way that it's beneficial for everybody. Right? So that's the aspect that's there, is that one must appreciate that. It's all been done to bring about, you know, proper God consciousness. So that's why then we follow the Bhagavatam the way it is. You know, we see like sahajiyas just want to jump forward to the 10th canto, but without understanding the principles of Krishna consciousness presented in the first nine, you won't really appreciate like that. So that's the whole, you know, say what you want, but that's the way Krishna's made it. Yes, please.
It has, should be gone through chapter by chapter, one after another. The reading matter is so arranged with its original Sanskrit text, its English transliteration, synonyms, translation and purports, so that one is sure to become God-realized soul at the end of finishing the first nine cantos. The tenth canto
right,
is just...
Because that's supposed to bring you to the transcendental position.
Mm-hmm.
So transcendental means at least enough to appreciate the 10th canto that Krishna is a person and this is what he does. You don't have doubts about it. If you have doubts about it, don't read it. That's the point. Right?
The 10th canto is distinct from the first nine cantos because it deals directly with the transcendental activities of the personality of Godhead, Sri Krishna. One will be unable to capture the effects of the 10th canto without going through the first nine cantos. The book is complete in 12 cantos.
Yeah, so it means that it means that's the way it is. It's not that, okay, well, that's somebody's opinion. No, that is how it was spoken. That was how it's been accepted by the acharyas. That's how it's been given to us. So it's not a matter of, oh, I have a different idea. It doesn't matter. But what's important is that, no, this is the way it's been designed. And if you don't go through this way, because we have to remember, it's not by analytical study that you understand God. It's by associating with the instructions, you know, about, you know, Bhagavat, meaning either what Krishna has said, what's about Krishna, what the acharyas have said, you know, in other words, what Krishna says about himself, or what others, or what the acharyas say about him, then that aspect of Bhagavat, you know, either Bhagavat himself, the book Bhagavat, or the devotee Bhagavat, all these different aspects, this is then how it works. And so by following that, Krishna becomes pleased and he reveals himself. Right? Something limited cannot understand unlimited. That's just the way it is. Right? There's not more. It's just like, how much can I stick in here? Can I stick my house in here? Right? If I can't stick my house in here, then, you know, what about the block or the estate or the country or the world or the 14 worlds or the whole universe? No. And we haven't even gotten to Krishna and Goloka. You know, so the whole point is that for the limited to be able to appreciate the unlimited, then that's by revelation. By, even though it's impossible, Krishna makes it possible. That's the achintya. That's the amazing aspect about it. You know, that he can do these things because, you know, he is the energies are his. He can do this. So if we appreciate that God being unlimited, he can do such a thing. You can't say it's not logical, right? For the absolute, which is beyond everything, for the absolute to be unimaginable is not, or do things beyond our understanding, is not illogical. And that this absolute can reveal himself even to the small infinitesimal jiva, that is also, you know, comes to say it's part of the inconceivability of the Lord. That's the achintya shakti. Yes.
The book is complete in 12 cantos, each independent, but is good for all to read them in small installments, one after another.
So each one is complete in itself, in that it brings you to the point of God consciousness. But at this end, it's talking about that. But at the same time, it takes you step by step deeper and deeper into the understanding. Because if you just accept that Krishna is God, I'm his servant, and that can get you back to Godhead. If you remember Krishna at the time of death, then you go back to Godhead. But there are deeper and deeper understandings, more detail, more connections between the different things. And so that's what's going on in the whole process. So that you get the best effect is then, you know, you go through the whole thing. And then, you know, and then the 11th and 12th give conclusions on that, how to see, and then everything becomes perfect. Yes, please.
We come to the introduction now. The essential paragraph.
That's the end of the?
That was the end preface. Of the preface.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Introduction. The essential paragraph of the introduction in which His Divine Grace presents a purport to Vedanta Sutra 111 that he mentioned earlier in the preface is as follows. The words Janmadhyasya, Srimad Bhagavatam 111, suggest that the source of all production, maintenance, or destruction is the same Supreme Conscious Person. Even in our present experience, we can know that nothing is generated from inert matter. But inert matter can be generated from the living entity. For instance, by contact with the living entity, the material body develops into a working machine. Men with poor fund of knowledge mistake the bodily machinery to be the living being, but the fact is that the living being is the basis of the bodily machine. The bodily
machine. Yes, by the living entity being there, that's why the body grows. Because the living entity. Without the living entity, the body doesn't grow. That's just, you know, that's, so that's the whole point. If something's growing or maintaining, it's alive, there's a soul there. And if it's not, then there's no soul. So that's the point. So to make the mistake that we're the body, that's going to be a problem. Because then that puts ourselves on a temporary footing, which goes against the very nature of the living entity, that they want to feel that they are eternal. They're always looking for eternal result. They want to maintain life because that's the nature, right? So that kind of aspect you always want to see. They're always wanting to know knowledge about this, always do something that gets result, that benefits this. So they're always going to be functioning in that capacity. That's because that's the soul itself.
The bodily machine is useless as soon as the living spark is away from it. Similarly, the original source of all material energy is the Supreme Person. This fact is expressed in all the Vedic literatures, and all the components of spiritual science have accepted this truth. The living force is called Brahman, and one of the greatest acharyas, teachers, namely Sripad Sankaracharya, has preached that Brahman is substance, whereas the cosmic world is category. The original source of all energies is the living force, and he is logically accepted as the Supreme Person.
Yes, because you have to have, you have Brahman, everything's Brahman, but you have, the point is there's the Supreme Brahman, and then there's the variation of the aspects of Brahman. Then you have the transcendental, and then when you have the mundane, it's just categories. That's all, because it's not perceived as Brahman. It means if you perceive it as Brahman, then yes, it's functioning as Brahman. But if you're not seeing in that capacity, it's a category. You know, it's a couch, or is it a chair, or is it, there's no back, so it's a stool. You know, and then, you know, or is it a mat, or is it a pillow? Everything's a category. So that's where that when you have the global village, everybody has their own definition of what, how you think, and you know, what's important, what's good and bad, how you categorize, and in that categorization, what's good and what's bad, right? And so then, you know, you could say, you know, about the agree to disagree, but then the problem comes is that then you can get nothing done. How, what do you do? Okay, we agree to disagree. Now what? I go on with my life. You go on with your life. We've hurt each other. And so we just do what we're doing. So the basic thing is, okay, I don't bother you. You don't bother me. Okay, that's nice. But the problem is that unless you actually come to the point of understanding the principle of what's there, then you can put things into perspective, because just being satisfied with the categories isn't enough. The soul has to be actually interested in what's beyond the categories, because the soul, being a particle of Brahman, should want to understand what is the supreme Brahman and see the relationship of themselves with that absolute and the categorizations in relationship to the supreme Brahman. Please.
The body, sorry. He is therefore conscious of everything past, present, and future, and also of each and every corner of his manifestations, both material and spiritual. An imperfect living being does not even know what is happening within his own personal body. He eats his food, but does not know how this food is transformed into energy or how it sustains his body. When a living being is perfect, he is aware of everything that happens. And since the Supreme Person is all perfect, it is quite natural that he knows everything in all detail.
Yeah, because the point is, and all detail is what is useful. You can say, oh no, but you don't know so many, but are they useful? You know, one, Krishna knows every detail of every down to the atom, but we don't know. And we can know what is in connection with us and how we can use it for Krishna. Then it becomes perfect. But the thing, point about, you know, oh, it's about facts. The point is, there's so many facts. So then how does all this come together? It has to be, we say facts and we mean logic. So you see, is things are not logical when it comes to a presentation of, you know, mundane scholasticism. It doesn't make sense. They can't figure out why these different things would be there, you know, and therefore it goes in line with how they think, because you have all these different schools of thought. Okay, you have the disciplines. You have biology, you have chemistry, you have physics, you have sociology, you have psychology. And if you put them all down in one room, they'll all disagree. So therefore, the only way they can keep from killing each other is just to agree to disagree. And in that way, then the academy goes on. And they're suggesting this as the system for the rest of the world. What they forget about is they're only having to work with a few people that are there. The students come in and go out. They have no responsibility. Teachers have zero responsibility in relationship with students, right? And so therefore, then it doesn't matter what happens. They're not running the institution, right? And they're not bringing in the money. They're not deciding on the policies. So therefore, to agree to disagree, it works for them. They don't bother the other teacher. They don't bother the other department. But you go up to the top, the administrators and that, it's not a matter of we agree to disagree. This is the way it's going to happen. This is what's done. We do it like this, we get money. We don't do it like this, we don't get money. Right? Students don't pass the grades. No one sends their kids. You don't have a job. There's no question. There's no discussion here. So it only works for those teachers that are sitting in that classroom that have zero responsibility, right? After that year, they're out of your class. You have nothing to do with them. Sometimes even out of that term, they're with you for 3 months and then you'll never see them again. So whether they learned anything or not, whatever it is, it doesn't matter. So this kind of thing, as we agree to disagree, is just for the animals. And it's not, is there an organ?
You can ask them, maybe they can drive you somewhere.
No.
It's okay. I'm going next to village. I will bus.
See? Okay. So he's talking about the village, right? You know, because that's the, that was the discussion on the global village and all that. So he's talking about being driven to the next village. And so then, and also what was mentioned before, about you're learning Bhagavatam, and so then you try to spread to others by going to the next village. Now you can also then help them in understanding Srimad Bhagavatam. So see, he's practically applying what Srila Prabhupada has mentioned in his comments here at Srimad Bhagavatam. So this is a practical example. So he's not even waiting till the end of class. He's applying it immediately. It's so he is appreciating it, you know, like that. So this is
no? Actually, it's 2 minutes over, Bharat. So technically, he did wait till the end of class.
Oh, he did. Just see, he perfectly waited till the end, and then like that. Okay, so then we'll end here. So then, yes. Yeah, so then you see, he's already applying it. We're still sitting around talking about what time it is, and he's already applying it. See, he's already ahead of us. I hope. Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Hari Bol, Jai Nitai, Jai Nitai, Hari Bol.